It's Ask the Expert with attorneys Charlie Cochran and Rachel Erickson on News Talk 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO. Ask your legal questions by calling the show at 707-636-1350.
Hi, folks. Charlie Cochran live in the KSRO studio with you every Monday from noon to 12:30. I come in here with my partner, Rachel Erickson, and we talk about some aspect of the law. We also field your legal questions, giving you free legal advice by calling the show at 636-1350. If you want free legal advice, give us a call, 636-1350. Now, you know, attorneys, I got to tell you, read the newspaper differently than other people. We're always looking for issues. What are the issues involved? And that was me reading the story the other day about Mr. Thorpe pleading guilty on Friday to molestation of several boys out at Hannah Boys Center. Rachel and I thought we would come in today and talk about some of the issues that are involved when you read the newspaper that don't particularly jump out at you. And we thought we would like use this as an opportunity to kind of like tear apart or put into perspective, a legal perspective, the different legal advice, the different legal issues. Now, I got to tell you, I'm starting off at this, coming into it by saying I'm not trying to attack the Hannah Boys Center at all. Founded in 1945 by a couple of priests and the Sisters of St. Francis, they've done good work by, as a matter of fact, they first admitted 25 boys around 1946, and by 1965, they were up to 1,000 boys that they had helped through their teenage years. And so they are a good organization, and within those good organizations sometimes come some bad apples, and Mr. Thorpe was one of them. He pled no contest the other day, and he'll serve he'll be sentenced for 21 years, and then he'll be potentially out in 17 years. Now, Rachel, you and I both read that article, and then we started thinking, oh my God, there's a lot of different legal issues here.
Absolutely. First of all, you're dealing with both the criminal and the civil issues. Of course, we're not criminal attorneys, but we are aware of the criminal aspect of these things and of what actually happened there, because if he had have gone to a jury trial and a jury found that he was guilty of everything he was charged with, he would theoretically be in jail for 255 years. So what he did was make a plea deal and say, well, I'll accept 21 years. And then if he's good behavior, he gets out in roughly 17. And so he's looking at maybe someday I'll get out of jail. 17 years is a long time. But there's also the considerations specifically with sex offenders, because once you have a predator, and once you're labeled a predator, and you have to be really careful in this area, because there's a difference between, you know, a 18-year-old boy, you know, having sexual relations with a 17-year-old girlfriend, which that is sexual predation by our law. But when you get somebody who's a repeat offender, they tend to be a repeat offender, which means repeat, 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 escalate, escalate. And there's a whole psychological, legal body of information out there on this, and we could probably do, you know, 15 different shows on how this works, the grooming that happens before the actual molestation, how they keep the silence, how, you know, it's not reported. It's hard for just an average person to understand if you're not in that world and if you don't study it, and hopefully it doesn't ever become a part of your lives out there. As our listeners, I really hope that this never affects you. But the important thing to realize is that this does happen. And I also went to a seminar on human trafficking a couple weeks ago, and that does happen. These things happen in our own community, and we have to be aware that they do happen. And what the heck do you do, and how do you do it, and when do you do it? And for human trafficking, it's a little different because the repercussions can be so huge as far as the police will come in. And, you know, you might have the people that have groomed you, and they might get into some legal trouble that the victim is not ready for. So
now in this case, there was actually a whistleblower that came forward. And the whistleblower came forward, and they did exactly what they shouldn't have done, and that is that they terminated the whistleblower.
And by they, you mean Hannah Boy's center. Right. Now, what they're doing is the center is trying to help wayward teens, teens that have gotten themselves into some sort of legal troubles or social troubles or whatever troubles they are. So, and their families aren't there or not able to help them. So it's a great concept and largely does a lot of good. But as we've seen with the Catholic Church, which also means to do well, sometimes you end up with some people that take advantage of their position of authority and abuse that position. So, yes, there was a prior director of Hannah Boy Center who went to the powers that be and said there's a problem with drugs and sexual abuse, and there were all these, bullying was a big thing, and he said there's a bunch of problems with this kind of thing, and instead of taking him seriously and looking at it, they fired him. And that's not what you're supposed to do as the employer. You're supposed to actually take that kind of complaint seriously and look at it. And so they fired him, and he brought a lawsuit for wrongful termination, which we handle those cases on occasion. And you don't fire somebody for somebody doing what's right. So they fired him. So he brought a lawsuit, and he got a $1.1 million judgment. And that's because what his damages would have been was his loss of income over years, and the destruction of his name, and probably some defamation stuff. I'm not really sure. I haven't looked into that, but that's a good judgment. And obviously a jury found that that was the right thing to do. So then in comes the new director, and over the years grooms these young boys. And apparently there were seven of them that we know of to date, and not all of them were necessarily residents of Hannah Boy Center, but some of them were. And there are two that stepped up and finally, and they're brothers, and they finally stepped up and said, hey, here's what's going on. And the criminal charges were brought, and the investigation started, and more was found, and more was found. And I'm not even sure that we've got all of the victims yet that have stepped up, because it's so uncomfortable. And some of them may not really understand what happened. I mean, when you're a child, you don't know it's wrong. It just feels wrong. And that's why we have to get into the discussion of the statute of limitations.
Well, a lot of times the teenagers are not, you know, they're not in an equal position. And so they feel like if the director has authority over them to, you know, be in the program or be at the school, or maybe
they're in charge of their food, their shelter. I mean, they're all of their having anywhere to be. They're the director's in charge of that. So if he tells you to do something and you say, no, I'm not going to do it. And, you know, these are young people. They don't necessarily understand.
That's right. And the thing is that this person has the authority and the power really to, you know, to allow them to even attend the school or, you know, the functions. And so, in other words, there is an unequal bargaining position, which is why we have to talk a little bit about the statute of limitations in these kind of cases.
It is very convoluted. It sounds simple, but it really isn't. And we actually have met the attorney that started the Priest cases here in California, and who actually had the bill drafted that allowed for a 1-year stay on the statute of limitations so that people could come in who had been molested many years ago and bring cases against this sort of thing. And that was very interesting. But so things have changed a lot. So the first thing you have to understand about the statute of limitations and why we're bringing this up is if you or anybody you know has been in a situation where you've been molested or sexually assaulted, there is a statute of limitations. And what we're primarily talking about is children. As an adult, you're expected to see and understand a little bit better than if you're a child. So as a child, you have actually 8 years from the date of your 18th birthday. So until your 26th birthday, you can report this either criminally or civilly or both. And most of these cases will have both of those components. And it's really important to understand the differences between the civil and the criminal components.
Usually in a statute of limitations case, in a civil case, you're usually dealing with a 2-year statute of limitations. So when we're talking about minors, once they reach the age of 18 years, at that point, under normal circumstances, the 2-year statute of limitations kicks in. But this is an isolated incident when we're talking about sexual abuse. They've been given an extra period of time after their 18th birthday up to the age of 26, as Rachel said, in order to bring the lawsuit.
Now, there's a loophole, and this is kind of an interesting loophole because so much of this is so tender and delicate, and a lot of it happens to young kids, and a lot of young kids repress this sort of thing, and we see it time and time and time again. And so if it has been repressed and it starts being remembered through therapy, hypnosis, something like that, and it comes out that this is actually has occurred, you get a three-year statute of limitations from discovery. So let's say you're 35 and you've had like some, you know, difficult emotional issues, and you go to therapy and you find out, oh gosh, and you start remembering that your father or your brother or your cousin or, you know, your brother's friend or somebody, you know, molested you as a child, and you're actually suffering from these difficulties because of this molestation that you've kind of repressed all these years. You have a 3-year statute from the day of discovery.
Yeah, those are the repressed memory cases.
And we do see those, and I know there are going to be a lot of people that are kind of skeptical of that, and, oh, well, if you had that happen, you would know it. And that's just through the years we found that that's not always true. And then we get into some further statute of limitations issues that we'll talk about further after the break.
Traffic on the fives and weather 6 times an hour, mornings on FM News Talk Radio, KSRO.
School is a month away. Get ready at the free back-to-school fair at Cottingtown Saturday, July 21st, 10 to 4, where they'll have lots of free fun and get it done for families. Take care of business with school supplies from Office Depot, posture evaluation from Salud Chiropractic, stop at the Tutoring Center, enjoy the Tourist Backroom Archery Demo, plus the back-to-school fashion show featuring great new clothes from Cottingtown shops and the wow smiles of kids from Bernstein Orthodontics. See you July 21st at Cottingtown.
Hi, this is Rachel Erickson from Kornblum Cochran Erickson & Harbison. All attorneys think that they can represent auto accident victims, but not all can do it well. So the injured person needs representation that is personal, thorough, and well-versed in the law as it changes over time. You can count on all of these qualities in our attorneys and staff at Kornblum Cochran Erickson & Harbison. Call us at 707-544-9006.
For more information, go to kcehlaw.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
It's Ask the Expert with attorneys Charlie Cochran and Rachel Erickson on News Talk 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO. Ask your legal questions by calling the show at 707-636-1350.
Hi, folks. Charlie Cochran here in the KSRO studio. Like I said, we're willing to give you some free legal advice if you want to call the show at 636-1350. That's 636-1350. As you know, every Monday we come in here and we talk about some legal aspect, some different topic that might be in the news, it might not be in the news. Today we're talking a little bit about this fellow Thorpe that pled no contest to different counts in the criminal court on Friday. He had been the director out at Hannah Boyce Center, and we do have to talk about that case because there's different legal aspects of the case. As Rachel said, there's a statute of limitations that might apply. There's a criminal aspect, there's a civil aspect, and there's obviously a lot of psychological components to this kind of topic. Rachel, you have a degree in psychology, and you've actually done some clinical psychology training.
I have, yes. I was a clinical psychology major down there at UC Santa Cruz, which was the best education you could get at the time. And so I do have kind of a special interest in this, in these kinds of areas. It's a very, very difficult area to work with just because it's so gut-wrenching and difficult. But we were talking about statutes of limitations, and this case that we're talking about is so difficult to get your mind around just in half an hour. So we're having a little difficulty like just getting it crammed into half an hour. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to discuss the governmental entity statute of limitations, because that sometimes applies. And I've had it happen that I've had people in the foster system who were molested by foster parents or foster siblings, and there is potential governmental liability there. And I do want to point out that specifically, let's talk about the Hannah Boyce Center. There's a statute of limitations that is, you can actually sue not only the perpetrator, which in this case would be Thorpe, but you can sue the center, you can sue the Diocese of Santa Rosa, the Catholic Church, you can sue all of those people in civil court if they knew or should have known that these things were taking place, and that statute is within 1 year. So you have all these really moving parts, and if there's a government entity involved, there's a special statute of limitations, and I want to do a separate show on the governmental entity issues, and we will probably do that next week. So tune in for that, because you need to know when the governmental entity is liable and how you deal with that, because it's always on a shortened time frame. So as far as these cases go with the molestation victims, they're extremely complicated. And a lot of times people don't really understand who they're needing to hold responsible. And a lot of people don't really understand what the damages are. And that's what we're always looking at in the civil arena. We're not going to lock you up in jail. That's for the criminal courts. So we're not going to do that. But what we can do is say there are damages in these cases, sometimes extremely severe, and is mostly psychological, sometimes physical. And you need to be able to go to an attorney that understands the delicacy of the situation. And part of the consideration in the criminal trial that I read in the paper, and I believe is true, is our district attorney, Jill Ravitch, said, and I agree with her on this, is that it's, you know, coming to a plea deal actually saves the children, the victims, from having to testify at trial. And I have had these cases, and every single time when somebody has to testify about what happens to them, whether it's a preliminary hearing or a trial or in a deposition, it's severely damaging. They have to relive it. So it's very difficult.
It's difficult, particularly when you you have a post-traumatic stress case where the person that would have to testify has to continue to relive it from the witness stand. And that's very difficult. So one of the cases, situations you're trying to get into possibly is to mediate the case, to try to get the case resolved so that the injured victim can get some, get some treatment, psychological treatment, be compensated for pain and suffering damages. And some of those, damages that are going to be long term, that will, creep into their mind throughout their life.
And the problem is not just that it creeps into your mind and that there's post-traumatic stress, though Charlie's absolutely right. That is exactly, what we zone in on. But the fact of the matter is the younger you are when these things start and the longer they continue, the more it shapes who you are as a person and how you perceive the world. So the damages can be just overwhelming. And that's why sometimes you will see verdicts in the, multiple millions, because to try and, backtrack and make something right, because that's what we do. I mean, as civil attorneys, what we're doing is we're trying to right a wrong. We're out there for justice. We're out there to try and correct a situation that never should have happened, but did. And so the only thing, we can't turn back the clock. We can't put you in a time machine, but we can, try and get some money for you so that you can get the treatment you need, the support you need, and the comfort and the protections put in place so that nothing like this ever happens again to you or anybody else in the community. So one of the things you have to be aware of is if you come to our office with this sort of a situation, and we do deal in these things, we do understand how absolutely heartbreaking it is and how traumatizing it is. And we've been trained in post-traumatic stress syndrome, and we've been trained in, the different psychological effects and how these types of cases come to be and all the very odd moving pieces. And statute of limitations is just the beginning. That's just, okay, do we have a case? Can we move forward? And proving it as something else, that's always a difficulty in these cases, because more often than not, it's a he said, she said, who's telling the truth sort of situation. So with the Hannah Boyce Center, it's very helpful that you had two brothers that came up together and said, this is what happened. And it starts with little things, and you I call it the thin end of the wedge. You insert the thin end of the wedge, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's what happens in these cases of molestation. And we're not talking about the hashtag Me Too stuff, because that is a different subject, and doesn't typically involve this grooming, the thin end of the wedge that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It tends to be just really offensive, blatant, crummy stuff that happens. But the thin end of the wedge is a little tiny bit, and and in the psychological circles, they call it grooming. And so what you do is you kind of start off with something that seems mild and not really that offensive, and then it gets a little bit worse, and then it gets a little bit worse. And before you know it, you've got full-on sexual molestation going on, where, and I'm not going to go into the different ways that that can take place, but, let your imagination run away with you, because those things do happen. And it is this culture and this grooming so that you won't report it. There's usually, like Charlie said, there's usually this position of power so that you feel like you can't say anything. And if you do, there will be repercussions and nobody's going to believe you. And increasingly, we are entering into a generation, a time period where people are being believed, that the unbelievable actually does happen. And I think the Priest cases were a really fine example of how things get covered up and how hard it is for people to come forward and say anything. And so, yes, people do not talk about these kinds of things. And if they do, a lot of times they're looked upon as being a bad person rather than a victim of something bad that happened to them. And they're looked at as being a part of the problem. And that's not how it works. There's a whole situation that goes on, and it starts small and escalates. And we're talking about specifically the molestation cases.
So if you want to give us a call down at the office, that's 544-9006. That's 707-544-9006. Again, we're talking about there's different age components, there's different statute of limitations components, there's the repressed memory cases, the different ways that we have to actually talk about this issue now,
and the different situations that occurs. It's not just, you know, church. It's not just the Hannah Boyce Center. It can be anywhere. It can be school. And I unfortunately, I believe that it does happen in school a little more than you think it does.
Also, you got situations like a baseball coach or an attorney or a doctor or a creepy chiropractor or a dentist that has power over you while you're sedated.
There was a case with a podiatrist that had a foot fetish. That's why he became a podiatrist. And it came out that he would sedate his clients and then, you know, do creepy things. So there are these perpetrators. And for us, the concern later on is that if these people get let out of prison or let out of treatment or let out of whatever they're confined to, they tend to repeat offend. And it tends to be a modus operandi. They have a certain way of doing it, and they do it over and over again. So also for us, it's trying to stop this from happening anymore and getting this person, you know, anyway, getting them off the streets is the criminal part.
Right. So if you have any questions about having been a victim, or you know of a victim, or you can give us a call down at the law office at 544-9006. I'm Charlie Cochran with Rachel Erickson, and this has been Monday's edition of Ask the Expert.
The preceding was a paid presentation.